Hey there, I'm Steve Ween, founder of Distillery, and Distillery Sessions is back. I hope you enjoyed our three episodes on Web3. Series 4 is coming right up very shortly, and our next series will bring you insightful conversations with some incredible leaders in the marketing and advertising space with perspectives on everything from AI to cultural intelligence to judging at Cannes Lion. But first, I have a one-off special episode I want to share with you with some industry leaders I brought together as part of a panel I held at the recent Customer Marketing Alliance event in San Francisco. I dove right into customer trust, the key to successful customer advocacy. Here's the recording live. We've got Alison Johnson, Global Head of Customer Marketing at Okta. Woo! We've got Joshua Zirkel, Head of Engagement Marketing at Asana.
Jamie.
And Andrea Silva, Customer Advocacy Manager at Alteryx. Yeah. All right, so I'd like you guys to tell us a little bit about your journey, and Alison, if you can start off telling us a little bit about how you got to your amazing role.
Yeah, absolutely. So Alison Johnson, great to meet you guys. I have the privilege of leading Okta's global customer marketing team. And prior to that, I was at Salesforce, small little company, where I was just telling Joshua, when I started there, I was the third employee to work on the customer marketing team. It's now like over 100. It's a huge, amazing, inspiring team. So it was a really great opportunity to grow and learn. And while I was there, I was on customer marketing, and then I also briefly did product marketing and was able to bridge the two. And then prior to that, I won't go into the whole career, it's a little bit longer than I'd like to admit to, because obviously I look like I'm in my 20s. But I've been in a variety of roles in like product marketing and corporate marketing. And I will say, like, I worked at Cisco Systems a while ago, and I worked on our community and our social media, and I've just really found myself in really amazing opportunities where I'm kind of at, like, the cutting edge of marketing. When I think of customer marketing now, and I think about when I was in college and the courses I was taking, nothing prepared me for the role I have today, because it didn't exist. And so I've just been really lucky in the sense of, like, signing up, raising my hand, being in opportunities where I can learn something new about the marketing landscape and world, and that's just kind of opened doors for me to be in the position where I am today in leading our customer marketing team.
Amazing. Amazing story. And Josh, I'd like to hear a little bit more about your journey and also maybe a little bit around how Asana thinks about communities.
Sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Josh. I work at Asana. How many of you are familiar with Asana? Then my team is doing our job really well. Okay, great. Bonus for me. So I lead community at Asana, and what that means essentially is we build programs to reflect the love that our customers have for Asana and turn that into actionable business outcomes and insights. And so that takes the flavor of a variety of things. We have a really expansive community program. So it includes standard things like a community forum, although I sit within marketing, so we look at the forum as a channel. And then it includes our ambassador program, which is our network of super advocates, and our community events, which this year we're hosting around 80 to 100. In years past, in pre-COVID days, when we were even scrappier, we actually did 200 events a year for a team of 4 people. So we were like hustling really hard. Prior to Asana, I led community at Evernote, which was another big brand at the time, different in scale because that was more B2C. Asana is more B2B. That community we had 200 million people in. So when we talk about community, it's one of these levers that you can really use to scale the impact that all the rest of your marketing work is having. And I'll talk more about how you can do the customer marketing and advocacy thing as an outcome of community. Prior to that, I was leading community at nonprofits, and I also did consulting in the world of productivity and organization. So I, too, am not in my 20s, although maybe I look it, maybe
you
I don't,
you
depending
do.
On how far away you are.
Yeah. Here, drink this.
Yes.
Awesome. And Andreas, love to hear more about your journey and also a little bit about how customer marketing is set up at Alteryx.
I know most of us in the room have kind of fell into it one way or another. I was fortunate enough not too long out of university. I was looking for a job. Knew someone through college, and they were at a little agency called Referential. He actually reached out to me and said, hey, we're hiring. We're doing this thing called customer advocacy. I'm like, that sounds cool. I don't know what that is, but yeah, sure, let's do that. Little did I know at the time, it was actually one of the best decisions I made because then I got to work under Helen Fieber for a few years. So those of you who know her, yeah, it was an incredible experience. From there, decided to go out, do some in-house work. So worked at Automation Anywhere for about a year, helping build up their customer advocacy program. Then went and did some customer marketing with Dialpad. A little over a year ago, a position opened up with Alteryx with Luis Gonzalez, if you know him. So I said, yep, I'm going to go work with that guy. So Alteryx, we are a data and analytics software company. The way we're set up, we are part of the customer engagement team within marketing. We are customer advocacy, lifecycle marketing, and then executive strategic program. So that includes our CAB and other executive events.
Awesome. Thank you. And hi, everyone. I'm Steve. I'm the CEO of Distillery. We're a global content company, and we're incredibly passionate about creating amazing customer marketing content. And we have the pleasure of working with Okta and Allison. But today we're here to talk about trust and how brands can effectively create genuine trust. And I'm going to start off by throwing to you, Allison, because surely trust and identity go hand in hand.
Yeah. So Okta, we focus on identity that belongs to you. So it is very important for us as we invest in our product to make sure that we are establishing that connection with our customers and putting them forward. So when it comes to customer marketing, we definitely want to live by our values and instill that trust in our customers. So it starts with our brand and our CEO and our leadership, and then it trickles down into everything that we do. And so for customer marketing, it's so critical that we are building that connection with our customers in an authentic way. So one of the challenges with customer marketing is at times you're being asked to connect dots for different teams to maybe drive an output like a deal acceleration or product feedback. And you have to find a way to do it in a really authentic way that connects with your brand and connects with your customers, but also drives results, those KPIs that we talk about in customer marketing. It's not just fun and games, but you have to drive results. You want to build your team, want to build your programs, and it takes money to write an investment to really be able to support your customers. So for us, it's been a very fun journey of bringing together our stakeholders and speaking the same language. So we acquired another company a couple years ago, Auth0, with Okta, and we've been building out the customer marketing journey and bringing those brands together and trying to create a world where our customers don't have to suffer because of the internal politics of bringing two brands together. So we're focused a lot on building trust. We think about it. It's our company goal and our values, and it trickles into everything that we do, and we have to do it in a really integrated, strategic way that requires just a lot of authentic conversations and tough conversations at times.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And Josh, from your point of view, how does trust play into community?
For me, I think trust is the foundation of community. Without it, you can't have the type of authentic conversations that happen at the community level. I think within brands, we think about our customers, not necessarily that there is a human there, but can we get the logo? Can we get a voice from the logo? Well, the voice behind the logo is an actual person, as it turns out. And so in order to facilitate those sorts of person-to-person connections, community helps make all of that happen by having different channels for different altitudes of customers. So for example, within Asana's community, there's a track for execs and VPs, but then there's everyone else, people who actually use the product, not just make the decisions based on it. We have to make sure that we provide avenues for all of those people to connect with each other, and importantly, with us. When they connect with us, that's when they get to peer behind the curtain, meet the people who are behind the product, and really understand the decisions that we make and why we make them. So for instance, when we have a product launch, we have one of our PMs, and sometimes even the developers working on the product, come and speak at our community webinar so that people can learn what's happening, why we make decisions, rather than, here's a new product, here you go. They feel more included in the process, and that really lends to the authenticity that you were talking about, which then is germane to trust.
Amazing. And what about from your point of view, Andreas?
Josh nailed it on the head. It's understanding that a lot of times we fall into the trap of just going straight for the kill and wanting that logo, wanting that case study, wanting that public-facing material, but not everybody wants that. Not everybody wants to be on a stage. Not everybody wants to be documented. So we partner with, you know, Jenna, you were talking about partnering with getting that product feedback. So we do a similar thing where we partner with our marketing team, you know, develop focus groups where they can provide that feedback on our go-to-market messaging, but it's in a private manner, or same thing with product surveys. And that's why I like to actually get on a call with the advocate, just so I can kind of get a feel for their personality, kind of get a feel for what they want to do. And if they have a more vibrant personality, you know, they're a little bit more articulate and very eloquent, that's the kind of person I say, yeah, you absolutely belong on stage. But we're talking about data scientists, right? So not all of them are going to be that extroverted. So I do kind of take a step back and say, hey, you know, let's bring you in. Let's have you take part in like some beta tests and, you know, give that product feedback.
Building on that, in terms of great customer content and building trust through customer stories, when we were talking earlier over a coffee, Andreas, you had a great anecdote about leveraging customer stories internally and making customers look good.
The best example I can give around that is if you all are familiar with JLL, you know, commercial real estate, we have a lot of great advocates there. They have like a no endorsement policy, right? But what we do is we work with them and we have done videos with them. We've done blogs with them on their internal training programs. The videos talk about how they've built a data-centric culture. And while they're not necessarily talking about Alteryx, the product, and oh, we love Alteryx and this is what it does for us, it positions them as a data leader. And so other people come in and they know JLL. They're like, oh yeah, those folks, like their data team is incredible. And it's a great recruiting tool for them. They've picked up a lot of analysts. Some of our own advocates have jumped ship and joined their team. So it becomes a great recruiting tool for them.
So basically you're helping people get jobs.
Yeah. Didn't know it, but yeah.
Josh, what about from your point of view in terms of community building?
Community building, first, generally, you have to have a product or a service that people like. Without that, you really don't have much to build on. But there's so many great ways to foster a sense of community. Once you have those initial advocates, really, for any of you out there, you probably have people who are big fans of what you do or have said, like, hey, I want to be more involved. Mm-hmm. These are the people to start with. For me, when I was first building Asana's community, the first thing I did was talk to people like this and say, hey, we're thinking of putting something together. What would you like to see? What would be of value to you? It's really tough to go in and say, we're building this because this is what we want to get out of it. Like, wrong way to start. The right way to start is to ask people, what will make it worth their while? Especially in the context of what we're talking about, for me, especially as a B2B marketer, we're asking people to take time away from their already busy jobs and work to participate in a community program that, if it doesn't have value for them, they're not coming back. Really getting clear on what I can create for them based on what they told me, and then mapping that to what does the business want and need from this community program? What is it trying to get? Is it more customer stories? Is it advocating on social media? Is it people showing up at events so they might have a chance to talk to sales or CS? What is it that's the nut of what the business is trying to get? And then I have to map those two things together. Here's what people want. Here's what the business needs. What program can we create that's at the intersection of those two things? Once you have that in mind, then it's easy to start doing experiments. Maybe you launch a Discord community or a Slack community and start seeding it with initial content so that people start to feel like this is what this community is about. You don't have to have the whole thing mapped out in advance in order to start experimenting and just get things off the ground to get some initial feedback from people who would be in your target.
And from your point of view, Allison, what about scaling globally and running a global program?
Yeah.
Making sure that, you know, the authentic nature of the stories that you're telling hits the right notes in local markets, but coming at it from a global perspective.
Totally. I'm just going to build too real quick off what both of you have said, because I think when you talked about super fans and starting there, so important, right? You have these like passionate customers that want to tell their story, and there's nothing worse than partnering with a super fan and then hearing your executives or maybe your stakeholders say, oh, I want C-suite, or actually, I don't want that persona. And it's like, no, you actually want to start here. This is your super fan. Here's someone that's going to give you like organic, genuine content. Like, that's how you establish trust, right? You build your programs around these people that are really vocal, that want to share their stories. And in turn, they build their careers and they bring more people along. That is so powerful in customer marketing and just like a great foundation. And then I think to further your point of like scaling globally, one of our opportunities is that we have a team in APJ and we have a team in EMEA, but we're really different businesses. The whole customer marketing team, we report together, but we have such different KPIs, the way the sales cycle, it's very different. The brand awareness that we have. We recently did an event in Tokyo and, you know, we had subtitles and our CEO, you know, was speaking, but everyone was listening in Japanese. And it's such a different experience than Octane, which is next week if you want to register. And, you know, we have just such different different brand awareness. And so when we started looking at our customer marketing team, we want to build customer trust. We want to find these super fans. We want to build content that's going to resonate. But the video that we're going to create for an enterprise B2B retail company versus JCB Bank in Tokyo is so different. We work with Distillery a lot, which is great. And we do focus groups. We do listening tours. We meet with our stakeholders to understand what content is going to resonate in market. What do our AEs, what do they actually want? What will they actually use? What are our customers comfortable with? Like, talking about customers not doing references. In Japan, it's such a different business model. So we want to be really mindful of like who they are and what feels comfortable to them, and then distribute out content that's actually going to be used, that we can actually measure, so you can go back to our stakeholders and share like what's performing and what's not performing. I mean, I could talk about this obviously for hours. It's such a fun and beautiful thing to work on, and there's always so many interesting things you can extrapolate from the data, but just building that out globally is so important, and listening to your stakeholders and editing your plans to really reflect what your users need and what your customers want is really important.
Andres, we were talking about before, so one of the things that both of you have talked about is these super fans. And what's really interesting from our point of view as a content company, when an organization finds and is leveraging a super fan and is leading on them so hard that all of a sudden all you see is that logo everywhere for about 6 months. Yeah. Andres, you had a point around how not to sweat too hard on that super fan and the approach that Alteryx was taking to find those other customer advocates to build trust.
I would consider ourselves very fortunate in terms of, if we are in the marketing org, we're one of the very few functions that are truly customer facing. And in my mind, we're the envy of the rest of the marketing org. So people are always coming to us and asking like, hey, do you have a customer that can speak to XYZ topic, or do you have a customer that fits this model? And they just got to ask, and you know, building these relationships with these customers, like, you know off the top of your head, like, yeah, I know this person. Yeah, this person would be great. And at the same time, we are also the gatekeepers, right? So we got to protect our customers just as much as the customer success reps or, you know, customer success managers and the sales reps do. Because we've probably all fallen victim to this at one point or another, is we produce this incredible case study with this Fortune 500 logo, and then all of a sudden, everybody wants a piece of that customer. You got to manage expectations and, you know, really protect the customer from getting pulled in all different directions to avoid that burnout. But also knowing the different customers in the back of your mind and knowing their stories, you can say, hey, let's cool off on Bank of America for a second. And I got this other customer who can knock it out of the park, and they have just as great of a story. And as a company, in my mind, it looks better because you have more breadth and depth of your advocates and the storytelling versus just using the same advocate over and over and over. And then people start to wonder, like,
is that all they got?
You know?
I would add also, this is where having different altitudes of personas at a given company comes in really helpful. So when you have salesperson requesting more from B of A, you can have the VP and the exec, the decision maker, but then you can have multiple advocates at different levels within the org who can speak to different things that all ladder up to the value that the customer is getting. That way you're not always leaning on the same person over and over and over, but if that particular logo is very important, yeah, broadening the base of people within it, especially down at the end user level, can be really valuable because they can speak to the day-to-day while the exec is speaking to the high-level business outcome.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Do you have any builds there, Alison? You're nodding along.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, I could just do that all day long. But I mean, no, absolutely. I think too, as the brands, like, customer fatigue is so real. And as a customer marketer, like right now for Octane, I'm like bullish in like no more additional requests because like they don't work for us. You had mentioned that earlier. Like, they're our customer, but they have a full-time job. And you don't want to elevate them too much where they get a new job in 6 months, you know? That's kind of common too, right? Like, ooh, you're shining too bright. It's a little nerve-wracking. A lot of my hero signage doesn't work anymore. Yeah, how do you protect them and build their brand, but don't get them promoted too quickly and look out for them? And it's a balance. And it's, I think with customer marketing, you sit at this really powerful place where you're listening to the business, you're making decisions based off what's going to advance the company or help reach your company goals, but then you're also looking out for your customer. You understand, like, are they looking to drive brand awareness? Do they want to build their own brand? Are they looking to like skill up and maybe expand their team and expand their scope, and how can you help them? I find, like, we talked about customer advisory boards, like getting product knowledge is really important to customers. So it's like you have so many tools in your bag or tips and tricks, and you want to connect everyone and make everyone happy. There's just so much data coming at you. You have to be so strategic in that. So
yeah, this is where there's a big difference between this type of marketing that's very people based versus what I think of as the rest of marketing, which is very like activity based. Like we send something out, but there's no human there. We get a click or we get data back, but we talk to people and it's very different. The mindset is very different.
Yeah, I think that people element is so integral to all of this and to building trust. In the B2B marketing space, what, and I'm sure I'm not alone here, it's not business to boring. We're talking to humans, right? Like, let's make content, great content about human stories that are really resonating with other humans and understanding what makes your customer tick, but where is that supposed to be resonating? How is that supposed to be landing? And Josh, I wanted to ask you about the difference between, you know, from your point of view, community building, trust, and B2B versus B2C.
Yeah, as it turns out, both similar and very different. So like I'd mentioned in my intro, I am at Asana and I also worked at Evernote. I've also done community building and nonprofit. At the bottom of it, everyone wants to feel like they're part of something. They want to be motivated to participate. They want activities that are interesting to them to do, to spend their time on. Where things get really different between B2C and B2B in particular is the context. In B2B, they're usually trying to solve a problem or use a tool because of their work. They're trying to do something more efficiently at work or fix something that isn't working, and that's what led them to use whatever your offering is. So it's a different mindset than B2C, where often the core value is, I like this, I enjoy this, it's for fun. The mindset is the most important thing to keep in mind because the context is really different. So when you're creating community for one of these two groups of people, you have to think about from their perspective, if it's for fun, like what would make them have even more fun? What would make them enjoy whatever you offer even more versus in a work context in B2B, what information can I give them that would solve one of their common points of pain? How can I show them how to use our tool and connect with other people who are doing it in a similar way that solves a problem for them? It's similar in that the activities, the types of programmatic things you'll put together would look more similar than different, but the mindset and what the activities are inside of them can be quite different and varied. But I like to build B2B communities that have a B2C ethos, because I think even at work, people like to enjoy themselves. Surprise! So a lot of the activities that we do in our program are really for people to not just talk about Asana itself, but we provide a foundation where they can also meet other people to enjoy themselves.
And Alison, I know when we were talking earlier about this, you had a piece around your own personal experience.
Oh, yeah, the Nordstrom effect. I mean, I don't think we go to work, to your point, and want to be bored, right? We want to like make it fun and exciting, but we also need it to be authentic. So I think about TikTok a lot too. So I know a lot of enterprise companies are like, let's get on TikTok. And it's like, oh, okay, but is that where your audience is? Is that like, if I'm like zoning out at the end of the day, do I want to be learning about identity on a TikTok? Probably not, you know?
Maybe.
But what I want to hear from another customer, what I want to hear from someone that's like had success or, I don't know, been able to like redefine their career by learning something new, like, yes, yeah, I would like that, or swipe up, or I don't know. So I think like the B2C world is so fascinating because we don't want to live two separate lives. So I want to be influenced by what is going on. So I love like the Nordstrom experience. I love how easy the app is. I love how it's personalized to me. I love how they know exactly who I am and I can return whenever I want. And so I want to take all that goodness from the B2C life and put it into my B2B programs. And I want like my team to like raise up things that are happening in their personal life that they love. I want to take all the goodness from our everyday life and merge it into the corporate world so we're not B2B boring and then we're having a good time and we're learning off that. So it's always a fine balance of like, this is great. Will it translate to the B2B world? Yes, I just need to find that hook into why, so I'm not watching weird TikToks. Or I possibly am. So there's that.
I wanted to ask about the makeup of the organizations that you guys sit in, what the customer marketing function, where it sits even. You know, at Distillery, we work with a number of different organizations, and it always fascinates me where customer marketing sits, where they're plugged into, where they're reporting to, who's giving feedback on our content. I think there are some real skills in customer marketing. Like, it's a really specialist skill set that not a lot of organizations do very well. Yeah. And Alison, from your point of view, what makes a great customer marketing specialist?
Well, we are currently hiring for 2 customer marketing managers, if anyone's interested. And I think to your point, like, the skills that we're looking for with a customer marketer are great communicator, a great collaborator, because you truly are like a Swiss Army knife or secret weapon. You want product feedback. You want to meet with executives. Like you had mentioned earlier, like, I got someone. Like I never go into a conversation without having like 3 customers in my back pocket. So I'm not disagreeing with what someone else is saying, but so-and-so at such and such, they actually feel that this would be a stronger point of view. So I think it's a really nice balance. Just having a strategic mindset, again, communicating, because you're taking all of this feedback and you're deciphering it and you're putting it through this customer marketing or community funnel, and then you're trying to actively portray them. So that's really important. And then I think having a really good sense of humor, because it's a little exhausting sometimes trying to make everyone happy, and that is not easy to come by. So I think I would just say, I think I've heard a lot of laughs. I've heard all the sessions here have been great and building off each other. And I think that's just reflective of the great culture that customer marketing teams can build.
Yeah, can build.
Yes.
Yeah. Andreas, what about from your point of view and how customer marketing is set up at Alteryx? And when we were talking earlier over a coffee, you were talking about some of the key skills in terms of communication and relationship building, and also really understanding and aligning where your customers are heading.
Part of what I mentioned earlier is we want to protect the customers, right? But at the same time, we also want to understand what are their goals, you know, what are they trying to do, and also trying to partner with our account team, so like our account executives, the customer success managers. And so once we've built that trust with the advocate and we understand what they're trying to do, and in a lot of cases, they want to evangelize internally to their organizations. In our case, they want to bring in more Alteryx product. And so we try to help identify opportunities to bring in, you know, awareness days, whether that's creating special internal-only content for them or organizing an internal awareness event that'll drive awareness for that account and help potentially bring in more business.
And Josh, what about where community sits?
At Asana, I sit within marketing, so community is a pillar within marketing. Customer advocacy actually sits within brand and content, which is a pillar within marketing. So it's interesting to me hearing all the different ways that these things are situated. As it relates to community, just show of hands, how many have a community program at your organization? Okay, and how many for you is it a team of one? Yeah, so this is interesting to me because I've watched the evolution of community programs over the years, and community as it stands today is actually very similar to where customer success was maybe 10 years or so ago, where if you had a customer success org, you were really at the forefront of what it was like to be in SaaS, and it was this weird thing that was in between sales and support, and what do they really do, and is it really needed? I think that's where community is right now, where some companies have it sitting in support, which is traditionally where it lived because it was meant as a way to deflect tickets. Others have it sit within sales as a way to drive pipeline, which is not my recommended spot to put it. For others, it sits within CX as part of the entire post-sale customer journey. And then for others, it sits within marketing because it's looked at as a channel. There is no right answer yet as to where this should sit. It really just depends on what the goals of the org are and how it's going to be resourced. But sadly, most of the teams that I speak with, it's still a community program of one person or 2 people. There's a lot that can be done with community when it's properly resourced and when it's set up to be successful.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think we might throw to some questions from the audience. Are you ready for some questions? Josh, how does Asana manage relationships and tools at scale for the community events, forum, and ambassador programs?
I love that you assume that we do that. But the good news is we do. We've given it a lot of thought. And so I don't know how many of you stopped by the Common Room booth, but we are actually a customer of theirs. I don't work for them. I'm not paid by them. But you need a tool that helps aggregate everything that's happening within the community that happens to be one of the tools. There's another one, Thredo. There are a few that do this. But you really need a way to look across the breadth of your community program to see who's really active, who needs a little bit of help, where they're active, which channels, what they're doing. Because without that, it's actually really difficult and exceedingly manual to keep track of all of the channels that you might have within your community program and try to map what you're doing to each person in each channel. And we have 400,000 people in our community program. I have a team of like a dozen people. There's no way to just do all of that manually. So having a tool that helps you do this at scale is really, really important. And that's how we do it.
Great. Another question. Wow, you're popular, Josh.
I feel so popular. Yeah. This is great.
This is following on from your response about tiers of advocate personas. How do you prioritize which tier of an org and stories to target with your advocacy strategy?
It really depends on what the business is asking for. So my team's main job is to cultivate whoever comes to us at whichever level in an org they happen to be. Oftentimes it's at the team lead and IC level. Great, we love people who are actively using the product. Sometimes it's people who are at a more executive level. We want them to use the product too, as it turns out. When it comes time to pull a customer story or identify a customer that could be a really great advocate for us, we use our analytics tool, Common Room, to identify who within an org is really, really active. And where do we have potential inroads to have a more in-depth conversation with a person or multiple people? So then we can see if this person is ready to have their story told or participate with us on stage or something like that. But we don't assume that they're ready, because as all of you know, if you work in customer marketing, not everyone wants to do all of the things all the time. We use the data that we have to identify who can we help cultivate to get them further along this path.
Yeah. Can I just add to this as well? I think what's interesting in my world is we have community that sits within our support organization in its support cases. It's truly like, I cannot log in. It is someone technical. It's a developer. That is not an ambassador. They could be a super fan, and that's a separate conversation, but we have a community that sits there. Then we have an influitive community where we are targeting C-suite personas in marketing, and that's where we do a lot of our focus groups. We're moving our CAB into that community, so we're now building two separate communities with two very different needs and very different KPIs that we're trying to explain to leadership, but they're like, it's community. And it's like, well, this is support, but it is a support community and they're different KPIs. So that's really interesting too, because while, you know, we have a very curated experience and we're able to pull like really great data because we built that community with the sense of building our pipeline, getting product feedback, getting press engagements, understanding what third parties are top of mind, which is very different than case resolution and escalations and things like that. So I think too, as you think about the tiers of advocates in your community, really establishing what is the purpose of that community, how are you measuring success, and setting that up front is so critical, or else you'll have leaders ask you to make both communities align, and that's just never going to happen. And that's okay, but they're so different.
And what about the role of content in those communities?
Oh, totally. It's huge. I mean, we get so much great insight from our customers in the community. So we do a lot of focus groups of like, what is top of mind? Like AI is really hot right now, and our customers are always asking us like, what is your stance on it? And we're like, well, what's your stance? Like, how do you define it? What are you thinking of? What's top of mind? And so from there, we get a lot of great insights that we infuse throughout our thought leadership content. And then we also use our community as a fishing environment of like, who wants to tell their story? Who's ready to like raise their hand and share their story and get on stage or do a case study? So we kind of use it as both. One, to pressure test topics that are top of mind for us and infuse that throughout our content. And then two, to use it as a recruitment tool to understand who's ready to throw it over to Distillery for a customer story.
Awesome. I'd like to ask each of you, actually, you know, we're all talking about trust, but I'd like to ask each of you the definition of trust for your organization.
I can't really define it. It's just, I guess I can give an example of just the JLL example I gave. So we have multiple advocates to your point earlier, you have different tiers of advocates, but one of our main advocates, you know, she absolutely loves us. I was texting with her this morning, but anytime we need anything from her, she's on it right away. Any sort of speaking engagements, any sort of reference calls, you know, she's all over the place. Like, she's in our corporate decks. She was on our digital billboard the week of our global conference. But we can also go to her, and if she ever feels like it's too much, like, she can always just, can't do this time. Like, it's a give and take, I guess I would say.
Great. Throwing you under the bus, Josh?
I mean, for me, I think it's pretty simple. It's, we tell people what we're going to do, and then we do that thing. And when you don't do that, that's when you break the trust. It doesn't mean that you need to be super transparent with everybody all the time about all the things, but I think it's actually really important with people, like, for instance, our ambassador community, they're all under NDA. We give them an advance preview of what's going to be happening in the product. We equip them with talking points, so if people in their orgs or in their community have questions. So I think it's really fostering this sense of, we're going to tell you what's going on. We want you to know who we are as people and who we are as a company and why we do the things that we do. I don't think you can fake trust. I think you have to earn it.
Yeah.
and it takes work to make that happen, especially when you're talking about doing it in communities of scale. But for me, I think the most real way to do that is by telling people what's going on. They want to know. Your customers are paying you. They have a right to know, to an extent. You can't tell them everything all the time, but what you can share with them, share it.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm going to ask you your definition of trust, too, just so you know. We're going to go all the way down the line. But I think, so my daughter is 4 years old, and I've been trying to explain concepts to her. Intuition is one we're trying to describe. But I think with trust, it's like building off what both of you said, that feeling of a customer knowing that, like, I've got their back and that I will represent them the best way possible. So, like, their face won't show up on a billboard without their approval, which can happen and was why I would never let anyone take my photo because I never want to see it anywhere. I think exactly it's like sticking to your word and being honest and agreed. It doesn't mean over-communicating and being too transparent, but just having their back, supporting them, and knowing that at the end of the day, both of you feel good because of that relationship you've established and that authentic connection of listening, hearing, and doing the right thing for one another. It's just so critical and hard, but important to do. Now, Steve, what is your definition of trust?
I think for me, when I've seen organizations struggle with trust, it's when there hasn't been great communication with the customer and the story's not told authentically. It hasn't been crafted, it hasn't been told in the right way. It's been sort of shoved out there, a logo's been stuck somewhere, and there's no real purpose for it. It's a little bit tick boxy. Someone somewhere has requested this and it's just being done, rather than really taking someone on a journey. And I think I was talking to another one of our clients the other day, and he was talking all about how he loves hearing the critical comments on social media, because from their customers, that's where he's learning. That's where he's really plugging into what people think, what people want, and reaching out to them, talking to them. I think that's a really great way of building trust. I want to throw to you, Josh, around another question. When does it make sense to add in more critical voices to ensure your community is truly authentic?
So here's the good news. You don't have to add them. They're going to come to you. So I think it's important to have a space where people can have open and honest conversations. As it turns out, as a business, sometimes you're going to do things that people don't like. That doesn't mean don't do them. It means you should be able to explain them and talk about why you've made decisions that you've made. And I think it's actually quite important to offer the space for people to offer contrary opinions, as long as it's done in a polite way that feels good for everyone who's participating in the conversation. I don't think it's a good idea to, especially executives don't really understand this. They want every single comment to be positive.
Right.
That is not reality. And I would rather people have feelings about what we're doing rather than not feel anything at all, not say anything at all. Being able to explain, here's a launch that's coming up. We know that people may have some strong feelings in different directions about this. Here's our mitigation plan, but we should expect that people are going to post about this because they care. When you can explain it that way and explain that you have ways that you're going to help address the narrative, usually that for me has been fine, but you don't have to worry about inviting those voices in. They will find you. Just make sure that you have a plan for how to address them.
Can I just add to this? I agree, you'll find them, but I also think we're sometimes responsible for making sure that we're finding communities that aren't naturally finding their way into our marketing plans. And I will say, my dad growing up was in a wheelchair, and it's really important for me to show people with disabilities in our marketing assets, because I remember being a little girl and being really confused why people were staring at us all the time, and it's because they didn't live with someone in a wheelchair. I was like, what, you've never seen this before? It's totally normal. So I think there are times where, like, your veterans, your veteran community, your people of color, women, like, it's really important to look at the data of your community, and is it really reflective of the world that we live in, and what can you do to help influence that? With our customer base, often we can be asked to diversify our customers, but is our customer base diverse? That is the real question. It is not me swapping out customers to tell a story that doesn't exist. I need to pull from a community that exists today. And if it doesn't exist today, what can we do as a company? It is not my job as a customer marketer to make people feel better about the faces on a screen. It's a company value of how do we get the right people a seat at the table? So then to your point, they're in the community, that their voice is showing up. And we partner a lot with our diversity and inclusion, our Office of Diversity and Inclusion, to make sure sure that we're not just checking a box, but that we're living our values, because that's really important. And you've got to really look at the data. And sometimes, to your point, it is negative, and the voices aren't being heard. And it's a big burden to carry, but as a customer marketer, when you're looking at the data, it's really, I think, important to do that.
Just because the voices can be hard to hear doesn't make them not valid.
Yeah.
And I think we've got time for one last question. And speaking of data, Robert, there you are. I had some really great ideas on this morning, but I also want to ask you guys around, as a discipline, do you think we're good at articulating the value that we create for our organizations?
Oh, man. It could be better. I think customer marketing in general is so exciting, and we're at the forefront. Like what you were talking about customer success 10 years ago, like customer marketing is still undefined in many ways, which makes it exciting and fun. But my customer marketing organization is very different from your organization and yours. And so our KPIs and data aren't aligned. And so we can do a better job. I think events like this, where you come together and you share best practices and you can connect and talk through your marketing plans, will be great. I think, you know, with product marketing, there's like very distinct disciplines. So I think customer marketing is still building that. And so we're at a really exciting time to be here, but I think it could be better. But there's so many great stories around the data that I know companies are telling, and I love learning about it. But I think we're still getting stronger as a marketing discipline.
Any builds there?
I want to piggyback off of you. I agree that we could be better. A lot of times we get stuck in the same metrics that we've been reporting on for the last 5 to 10 years, which is, you know, productivity. How many cases did we put out? How many reference calls did we assist with? You know, all the same stuff that we've been reporting on for the last 5 to 10 years. And there have been a few people that have actually kind of broke the ceiling or gone past the glass ceiling and have actually done something really cool, and I think it's our responsibility to share with one another. Robert, you had your talk earlier and you shared some of your stuff. Like, that's gonna help other people, and I'm more than happy to share, you know, what I know, and I think that's only gonna help each other with our own KPIs and metrics and showing that we can bring value back to the business that's tangible dollars versus just productivity based.
Amazing. Well, I think we're out of time, and I think that's a great place to wrap up. Thank you so much for your thoughts. Thank you for your questions, everyone.
And thank you for joining us. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave us a comment. I'll be back with Series 4 very shortly.